Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hello and welcome to News Roast. My name is Julian Rubinstein.
My name is Hayden Prowse.
And like you didn't know, this is Three Courses of Metaphorical Conversation. How you doing, Hayden?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, good weekend, yeah.
Very good weekend. I'm very excited about our guest this week.
Do we have any
housekeeping to do before we do the
introduction? I know for a fact over 20,000 people have actually listened to the first episode, which I'm really pleased
about.
Yeah. But literally four people actually rated and reviewed the podcast.
How many of really those 20,000 are your friends that you forced into listening on Sunday?
I reckon at least seven people that my mum's like asked who probably didn't really like it that much.
Right.
Most of my friends generally try not to listen to my voice when they don't have to.
Right.
So I'd say four. How many of your friends listen to this?
I know I haven't been introduced yet, but I'm nodding to that bit.
That was our guest, by the way, which this week
is the illustrious, gorgeous man hunk that
what a man hunk.
Rick Edwards, presenter, genuinely good bloke.
Author
of a very powerful book, which we'll talk about in a moment.
Science, and Cambridge science graduate, no less.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Player of chess.
All checks out so far.
Yeah.
Player of chess in Pizza East in Kentish Town.
Backgammon.
Backgammon's like chess for morons.
What?
We were big.
Are
you
kidding
me? It's like a spurgic chess.
No, listen.
He doesn't even know about doubling dice, I bet you.
No, he wouldn't.
No idea.
So I went to, I'll just start with a brag, International Backgammon Tournament in Copenhagen.
No.
Yes,
what?
I did. Last Easter.
Are you like a backgammon master?
Not yet, but I'm getting there. We were watching quite a lot of the top level games between the guys who play it very seriously for a lot of money. And their attitude towards chess is quite funny. In that they, I think they start playing chess, but then because they're gamblers.
Right.
So you get runs of luck in backgammon. And there was one guy who is apparently one of the top 10 players in the world who's complained to another guy for he just lost to him, saying, I've had like 6 months of bad
amazing
luck. And the guy goes, well, you know what they say, if you don't like it, go and play chess. And said it so dismissively. And I think it's a fair point, because in chess, it's just brute intellect.
Yeah.
If you play against someone who is better than you at chess, you will lose.
Got no excuse.
Every time.
Yeah.
Whereas if I play the world number one at backgammon, I might win one game.
Yeah.
And that's exciting. That is really exciting.
I've never heard anyone describe intellect as like brute intellect.
Yeah, but it is. But it is though. It's just that chess is brute intellect.
So
that's why computers are so good at it.
Yeah,
so
it's that
possibility that you could beat someone better than you, and also if you lose, you've always got the excuse of bad luck.
Well, yeah, I mean, the element of luck isn't that big. That if I play someone who is better than me to a best of 13, I will definitely lose.
Right.
And I won't be able to blame
luck. So I used to live quite near Rick, right, in K-Town, in the old K-Weezy. And Rick sometimes is to be seen with his very good personal friend,
Tim
Key.
You had to leave Kentish Town because you called it K-Weezy.
I had to leave.
Everyone else said, we can't really have that around here. It's a nice place.
I'd see them playing and I'd literally go and be like, oh, hi, guys.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, hi. And I was like, oh, hi, guys.
What, you wanted to be involved?
I was just hoping maybe there'd be, I don't know, some sort of bring-in, which never came at all.
It's always a bit too intense.
So I literally just left.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I don't feel sorry.
Johnny, this is why you do the podcast. It's fine.
This is the only way I make friends.
This is the only forum in which you're allowed to have friends from now on.
So basically the only place I actually have friends is in a very strange
where your voice is recorded.
Nice piece of carpet.
Then it's okay.
Yeah, we wouldn't have a conversation this long
if it was
just social.
With the Kasparov of backgammon here is our first guest, Rick Edwards, which we're very excited to have on. He's an old friend of ours. We've worked with him on a bunch of stuff.
We have.
Yeah.
I worked with him on a horse meat documentary.
Yes.
Which was very good.
Before that...
I don't know if it was very good.
It wasn't very good, was it?
Your bit was good, actually.
You were good. You were very good at managing a team of juveniles talking about horse meat and...
Team in the very loosest sense, I think.
Has the taste of horse changed your mind about horse meat? No.
No.
The problem was always the labelling, which actually isn't very entertaining.
No, but what you may not know necessarily about Rick, because obviously he's got his excellent podcast, Science-ish, doing very well indeed, very funny as well. But as well as, you know, sometimes... quite subtly, but definitely ripping the piss out of the cast of Made in Chelsea, which I do personally enjoy. You also wrote a book about politics.
I did, weirdly. Yeah, in 2015, because I was doing a show for BBC Three called Free Speech, which was effectively Young Voters Question
Such
Time.
A shame it was canned.
You came on?
Yeah, it was great. It was a shame, though, man, because that was the forum where young people got to talk about politics, and that's gone.
And totally gone. There's nowhere. I had a... not exactly a falling out, but a definite disagreement with the sort of powers that be at BBC Three when BBC Three went online. And in fairness, it doesn't really make sense to do Free Speech, which is a live TV programme, online, because I don't know how you'd get an audience to that.
Absolutely.
You campaigned really hard on the closure of BBC.
I thought it was... who knows that? I don't really know how BBC... I don't know how you'd measure it. I don't know what metric you'd use to say whether BBC Three is going well or not. I know that success, I didn't go on BBC Three. I sort of see some BBC Three content on Facebook. Mm. I don't know if that counts.
Well, so as soon as they stopped employing you just vetoed it?
Yeah, I never watched it anyway. they decided that they didn't want to do any kind of direct sort of on-the-nose politics stuff.
Oh, really?
For young people, because they felt that young people weren't interested. I think that's patronising. Yeah. B, don't think it's true. C, I think they sort of have a duty to do it anyway, because no one else is going to do it. And I think it's a real shame that there doesn't... exist at
it's funny because they've done, you know, I mean, there've been absolutely no doubt there's been standout hits since it's gone out of line. I'm thinking of, you know, Fleabag, Man Like Mo Bean, and obviously the rise and rise and rise of People Just Do Nothing, but it does seem that that has become kind of the streamline now, hasn't it? You know, it's a great place for new comedy, but not so much for discussion.
This brings us quite nicely on to Rick's first course.
Do I introduce, obviously,
you've listened to tons of these, I can tell.
Yeah, so I know the format intimately well.
I can see that.
But just remind me.
Well, let me ask you. So basically, it's three courses of conversation.
Yeah.
So do you like a starter? What's your favourite kind of starter in real life?
If I'm really bawling and I'm in like a Café Rouge.
With your backgammon.
Edwards, don't lie to us. That's not bawling for you, Edwards. We've seen you out and about.
Man of the people.
All right. Café Rouge.
All right. Fine. I'm in Cafe Bohème on Gosser Street. And I'll take the French onion soup if it's available.
I'm a big fan.
Very nice.
Or if I'm in a Carluccio's, which I also like. I enjoy chain restaurants.
Yeah.
Because you know what you're like, good chain restaurants, because you know what you're
getting.
You know what I mean, though? Sometimes you go to a very expensive restaurant, you think, well, I don't know. The only thing I'd say about Pain Quotidien is A, hard to say. B, I think it's a bit overpriced.
It's the most poncy of the chain restaurants.
Yeah.
Which is perhaps why I like it.
This has just gone so metropolitan liberally.
Yeah.
What is your metaphorical starter for us?
My metaphorical starter is people jumping to conclusions about turnout in the immediate wake of elections. So this, I think, happens after every election, pretty much. And people, understandably, once an election is done, want to know how specific groups of people voted. And so almost instantaneously, figures will start being kind of drip-fed out there. And there was one after the 2017 general election that was particularly interesting, which was 72%. They said 72% of 18 to 24 year olds have voted, which on the face of it, you go, fuck me, that's incredible. Yeah. That's higher than the overall turnout of the country. And given that previously it was like 44%, like it's a staggering increase.
Something smelt fishy
about it. I immediately just thought, I can't see how you get that bigger leap. And then people did a bit of digging quite quickly, actually, on that. And it turned out it was essentially just made up. It's kind of plucked out of nowhere.
Yeah.
But because of the way that information kind of proliferates and spreads on Twitter, it got everywhere.
Yeah.
And so David Lammy tweeted it. And it's also the classic thing, as soon as you, like, retractions always get less traction than the original
yeah,
thing.
Yeah,
but the 72% came from nowhere. And I think what people forget, or just actually, I don't, it's not about forgetting, it's just don't know. Like, I didn't know any of this until the wake of the 2015 election, after which I'd done a load of sort of campaigning around trying to get the youth vote out. And
that's
when I wrote the book. Yeah. And so as soon as it was done, I was like, well, I really want to know if anything happens. Like, was there a lift in turnout?
Because
and
of your
you
book.
Try and you because yeah. of you yeah. because of my book,
yeah.
And you try and find the data, and you just can't.
Weirdly
and
hard, isn't it?
Yeah, because there's no. Obviously, that? It's a secret ballot. Exit polls now don't even. They just ask how you voted. They don't ask any other information.
Right.
So you're relying upon polls that maybe Ipsos Mori have done previously.
Yeah.
Which are famously hard to get to be representative, because people will either lie about their voting intention, or you'll only get to speak to people who are quite politically engaged, so you end up talking to too many voters anyway. There's loads of sort of biases, and it's very hard to weight it correctly. So it's just, it's an estimate. And what you actually have to do is wait for about 6 months or a year until the British Election Study have literally gone around banging on people's doors asking people face to face, which is seen as being a slightly more reliable way of doing it. But the fact remains, it's still just 10,000 people probably that you're then extrapolating out to the population.
So it's basically nonsense, isn't it?
It's kind of nonsense. Yeah. You can kind of make any figure stick. Like, even the figures. So the reason that I wanted to talk about this is because there was this, you know, the term youthquake was used a lot, and was the Oxford English Dictionary word of the year, and it was to describe, you know, the fact that seemingly Jeremy Corbyn had mobilised all of these young voters. And now, looking at the British Election Study, which has just come out, it looks like that probably didn't happen. It looks like, if anything, turnout amongst the youngest demographic, 18 to 24, might have decreased by 1%, although they're pretty hazy about that. And it was the sort of 30 to 40-year-olds where turnout was lifted.
I was actually really pleased when I read that, because it makes me feel a lot more positive about the chances of the next election really genuinely becoming a swing towards Labour in a meaningful way. Because if you are going to politicise, you know, obviously because 40 is the new 30, you know, if you are going to politicise...
And why is it that we all think that?
Because the papers say it's true.
No, it's because we're all nearing 40.
I don't know what you're talking about on Twitter. I tell people regularly that I'm 24, and that's a huge lie.
That's actually illegal on Tinder, by the way.
Oh,
just
is
so
it?
You know that. Yeah,
I didn't know that. No, how do you know that?
I don't know.
But I'm just really loving it, just imagining the Tinder police going around to people's houses and going, listen, you old slimy bastard. You told me you were 24.
But they can only do it by knocking on people's doors. It takes 6 months to get the information. It's
and
a
there's
nightmare.
Only 10,000 of them.
No, I think what's interesting is, and it was, you know, accompanied by that famous photo of, you know, people with the Jeremy Corbyn signs at Glastonbury. And as we all know, very few 18 to 24-year-olds can afford to go to Glastonbury. There is the thing that is kind of amazing, I mean, on both sides of this. I mean, the fact is that the pictures that got beamed all around the country, Jeremy Corbyn on the pyramid stage, the type of PR that hasn't happened for a political party, certainly in my lifetime, of it being quote-unquote cool, Stormzy, biggest grime artist in the country, coming out and starting that as a chant, hugely significant. I think you can't underestimate the significance of stuff like that. But as I asked recently to someone else, given how the clusterfuck of a year that the Conservative Party had, why are Labour only a few points ahead in the polls and not 40 points ahead in the polls, do you think?
Well, I think it's an excellent question, and I certainly don't have the answer. But I guess that the reason that you're feeling optimistic is that actually, if the youth turnout wasn't that massive, there is still plenty of work to be done, and possibly Corbyn would be able to mobilised there.
I just wonder, I mean, I'm asking you, really, I mean, and I do want you to answer questions, not just say, I have absolutely no idea.
He's a scientist.
I mean, he's just, what's the bloody point? He's just a scientist.
I haven't done the experiment, guys. Yeah. so how would you do
the experiment? let's go through this. What is your hypothesis?
My hypothesis is that the Conservative Party are doing better than they should be.
Okay, now what's your method?
And my method is...
Bunsen burners?
I'm not going to use any Bunsen burners yet. Ideally, what you want is an island, an unpopulated island.
Yes.
And then you take as many people as possible onto the island that are sort of representative of the UK.
Sounds like a TV show coming up that you're pitching for.
Yeah, someone write this down.
I host it.
Do you know what? You want babies.
Yeah.
You don't want adults. You want just... You want to
it's
put
a bit weird
about it is, but yeah. sometimes science is weird.
I'm into it so far.
You want an island of babies and you just want them to grow up and then you just measure everything.
First of all, also, there has to be
and
beakers.
And see what emerges.
I want glass beakers in this
You can
experiment.
Have beakers, but only if the babies want them.
But also...
Sounds highly achievable.
Hang on. Yeah. Because also, the most important part I always thought...
It's sort of Lord of the Flies,
isn't it? Science class was when you had to draw the diagram. Yeah. Do you remember having to draw your experiment? Yeah. So how would you draw this situation exactly?
Well, I mean, I'd be doing a lot of copy and paste with an image of a baby, wouldn't I?
Yeah. I don't think you get past a week before you got arrested by U-Tree.
Well, hang on, no, the whole point is I'm not interfering with them.
Right, okay.
That's like literally the point of the experiment.
Let babies do their thing.
I'm letting them do their thing.
Yeah. How do you know about interfering with babies?
Oh, come on, this is getting ridiculous. You're going to start some trend or something. Let's nip this in the bud. But it is an interesting question because you did study this a lot for the, you know, to write this book, presumably, and you must... And it's interesting you brought this up because you understand it more than most people. But it is impossible to predict. We keep thinking we see these trends. They don't, you know, they don't follow our expectations. So is all this stuff just hot air? Is Jeremy Corbyn going to kind of disappear in a puff of smoke? We're going to have, you know, Boris Johnson as our next prime minister. God forbid we're going to have Mr. Gammon himself.
Abortion
Rees-Mogg
banned throughout the country.
Yeah. It just doesn't seem that you can predict politics anymore. And why has that happened?
I don't know if we've ever been especially good at predicting stuff unless the margins are big.
Yeah.
If it's a big margin, it's pretty easy. Mm. If you do look at predictions from previous elections, you find that generally speaking, they're always sort of within the same kind of margin of error. It's not quite as bad as economics.
Right.
Economics is obviously, and with all due respect to all the economics professors who are listening, absolute bollocks, isn't it? I mean, they can't.
They're making up as
they
go along.
They can't right.
That's why the whole part of it's called futures. It's just like this is going to happen. No, it's not.
It's just a sort of elaborate, vaguely
mathematical. Election this year?
I don't know.
I do.
Do you?
Yeah.
But then you're just predicting something that, again, it's just you have no
Here's
ability
Here's the trigger
to
of events.
Well, go on.
Okay, last week, Jacob Rees-Mogg gave 100,000 signatures into Number 10.
Right.
And do you know who that was sponsored by? The Daily Express.
Oh, my God.
To a cut in foreign aid budget. Bizarrely.
Not helped by the Oxfam article
recently.
No,
really not.
Company money on prostitutes. And
we'll come
couldn't
to that.
Get any worse.
Did you see the interview with the with the woman on Newsnight? Yeah. That
one
Emily
of the prostitutes?
Yeah. Fuck. She was... No.
Oh, right.
Someone... She, like, runs Oxfam, I guess?
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
I don't know.
But you know, this story's been around for months and months. Like, this is just, it's very interesting that's been picked up at this point. Anyway, the point is.
What did the leadership say? Was it?
The main thing was, Maitlis sort of said, do you know of other instances of this?
Yeah.
And she was like, yeah.
Fuck.
I said, since 2011?
Yeah.
Jeez. And Maitlis was like,
most unbelievable thing is wasn't he using like Oxfam company money?
Yeah,
it's like,
I think
the that's
here
the accusation.
Is
isn't
like,
it? Yeah.
Should I put it on the personal credit card? Yeah. Or should I, fuck it, I'm just going to expense it. What could go wrong?
I think
we were a little bit. Weren't we?
Well, yeah, I mean,
okay, we were a bit.
It's so out there.
I definitely
was so ridiculous.
But the point I'm making really is that I think there is no doubt that there's going to be a leadership challenge this year to Theresa May.
By Rees-Mogg,
Johnson, Gove. There's a lot of them who I think they're in the shower.
Yeah.
At that point, there is genuine cause, once there is a new leader, for two things. One, a vote of no confidence in a government without a majority.
Mm-hmm.
Because the DUP have already said that this hard border in Northern Ireland is something that is going to be a real issue for them. Simultaneously, we've got people saying we're exiting the customs union and the single market. Now, that you cannot have freedom of movement and not have a hard border in Ireland. It's impossible.
So at that
point, there may well be a vote of no confidence. And at that point, there is absolutely every reason for the people of this country to say, well, with our second unelected leader, actually, that's not... Well, no, it was because obviously second we have referendum. Had an election.
But second election, sorry.
Second election. Yeah, yeah. And at that point, I think a second referendum. So, I mean, I genuinely think this year it's going to just be chaos.
But the... what seems to be happening to me, and again, this is just guesswork, idle guesswork, is that May is being used by the Conservatives to steer the horrible ship that is Brexit.
Yeah.
And as soon as that is done, whatever that means, they will get rid of her. She feels like a supply. She feels like a supply teacher.
Yeah.
Where and what's really kind of
kind of awful. She used to bully our supply teachers so badly.
Yeah, I feel like she must be getting bullied behind closed doors.
Mrs. May, we can do about Brexit.
Look at what Priti Patel did last year. She's just like, no, I had secret meetings with her. And what?
Yeah, I went to the toilet without asking.
She's not a real teacher.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think that upsets me about that is that it would imply that the Conservative Party attitude is we don't really fancy her to lead our party. Mm. But we will let her lead the single most important thing that any government has done since the Second World War. Then get rid. I think that's
likely. She's basically like a hostage. They're just using her to take the bullets.
Yeah.
On this impossible task.
Yeah.
And that's really maybe that's the best leader you could possibly hope for in this situation.
But the thing is, things are much
worse. There's no
worse.
Right outcome.
So I have a friend whose sister actually works at the department for exiting the EU.
Mm.
And according to her, she's a civil servant.
Yeah.
According to her, things are so much worse than we could possibly imagine at this point because people are playing politics for that exact reason. Like apparently the European delegation genuinely expected the British government to come across and genuinely start negotiating, not for them to play politics.
Yeah.
As in, because 27 years to pull stuff apart, 27 nation states needing to ratify things, it's a real clusterfuck for anyone.
Yeah.
But the fact is that the most basic stuff still haven't been agreed. And we had a great interview a little while ago with James Ball, who was special correspondent
BuzzFeed journalist
for BuzzFeed.
Oh, who wrote the what's the name of his book? I got it for Christmas.
How Bullshit Took Over the World.
I haven't started
really
reading
wonderful it. Guy as well. Really wonderful guy as well. And what he said that a lot of people don't realise is Article 50 is basically like a ticking time bomb. On the 19th of March at 11:59 in 2019. 27 countries have to ratify us staying in. At that point, if we've got no deal with them, we're jettisons with no basic agreements with the countries that we, a lot of our, you know, small and medium-sized businesses export to. And that, and I think it could genuinely be like, I think it could
amazing.
Be freedom! Yeah, woohoo! Burgeoning free market deals all over the world!
It's the most, it's the greatest collective act of democracy this country has ever seen. We've all collectively decided to jump off a cliff together, and it's and that's
beautiful.
Did either of you hear Nick Clegg talking to James O'Brien? I said some very intelligent things about the fact that, in his mind, the actual ability of politicians to quote unquote lead has never been more diminished. That really the idea that it's like the quote unquote the will of the people, the will of the people, the will. It's like we've lost, you know, 77 billion off the national. Sort of like, I don't know what the word is for it, not like...
bank account.
Let's just go with that. We've lost 77 billion!
<bank. laughs> Yeah.
I mean, someone's going to tweet and go, that is fake news. There is no national bank account. But you know what I mean.
But there should be, and there will be after Brexit. Am I right?
A national British bank account.
Blue passports and a British bank account for everyone.
And a British checkbook to write bouncing checks to the nasty
in
foreigners.
Every house.
We all get a card. We can all go to the ATM and take money out of the British bank account.
But whenever we go to Spain, we write checks.
and no bad people have any bank accounts. No. Just ethnic.
How many pesos is that?
Hang on, what's that, cheddar man? We have to move on from this absolute nonsense that we're talking to your main course.
I'm sure our audience is much clearer now on the situation with Brexit and elections, so we can
youth vote has definitely been solved.
Cleared that up.
let's see if we can do as good a job. I mean, you're like
fairly discursive stuff. I'm one of these old-fashioned people, by the way, who really likes Nick Clegg. I think he's great.
I think he's great.
Hayden, we literally spent 2 years trying to give him a box of antidepressants.
I did chase after him. But
literally 2 years. Nick, never getting to him. Always getting turfed.
And these men in suits kept dragging him away, obviously, to section him.
There was once when we were in Oxford at this talk he was doing, and Hayden went round the side of the building, and I swear on my life, this guy just came
pushed me against the wall. He was so undercover. He was like carrying.
Doesn't need antidepressants.
The deputy prime minister is fine. I'd just like to take this opportunity actually to apologise to Nick Clegg for bullying him for so long, because I do really like him. I think how much better would things be if Nick Clegg was back in the government?
Well, I don't know.
What a legend.
I mean, I still think he's a prick. No, I don't really. I still think the tuition fees thing is pretty unforgivable.
What was he supposed to do?
Yeah.
Just not do that.
No one answers
had
that.
Zero
question.
Power.
Yeah.
You know, well,
no one answers that.
He thought that he could achieve some other good in government.
But he could have gone into coalition with Gordon Brown.
That's a separate point, though.
No, it's not, because he would have been able to keep his. Actually, this is hypothetical, but I would have imagined that Gordon Brown would have been a lot more sympathetic to the idea of
tuition
fees.
An aggressive, slightly obnoxious thing to assume that the country which voted in majority for the Tories would then accept two parties who they don't necessarily agree with at all or don't ideologically mesh, and to say, actually, I'm going to decide that these two parties work. Yeah. I'm going to, like, that would be a lot of responsibility on his shoulders.
I know, but I'm someone who wants a second referendum, so there you go. Well,
let's move on to our main.
I'd like a referendum on a second referendum.
That would be fun.
I love referendum.
I think we should have a referendum every week.
Oh my God, that is such a good idea. Yeah. A referendum on whether to have the second referendum.
It's perfect.
Yeah. But serious point, they're a terrible idea, particularly for stuff like this, where the whole point of politicians is they know more about this stuff.
Yes, exactly.
And you kind of elect them to make decisions.
Yeah.
Which kind of comes into your leadership thing.
Well, that's kind of what I was saying. Old Cleggy had got the point.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll definitely have a second referendum, because the people who are in favour of it, Lord Adonis, Nick Clegg, Alistair Campbell, and Tony Blair.
One of the great names, by the way. You sort of forget, because it's so, you hear it so often now, but Lord Adonis.
Yeah. He also looks like the antithesis of an Adonis.
Someone calling a register going, Lord Adonis, and him putting his hand out going, don't take the piss. Lord Adonis. Lord Adonis.
It's quite mean to Lord Adonis.
I mean, he must have heard it before. Come on.
Well, listen, do you like a main course? Are you a man who's... what's your favourite main?
I will always eat a main course.
Are you quite a healthy eater?
I'm not bad. I'm quite good at the moment because I've got a film... I don't have to. I've chosen to, and also I'll get paid for it. I'm doing a job in Panama, and it's going to be really hot, and so I'll have to film in like shorts and t-shirt.
Oh, so you want to look good?
I want to.
Are you the new man of Del Monte?
Good. Yeah. Yeah. In shorts and t-shirt. Yeah.
What's the new film?
And Panama hat. Not a film. It is a dating show for Channel 5. Oh, I've got to be there for a crushing 4 weeks.
It's like a dating show in a jungle in Panama.
On a beach.
It's going to be idyllic, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's basically their version to Love Island.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's move on to the main, metaphorically speaking.
Yeah.
What are we consuming?
So we are consuming the thorny question of whether we are sort of blindly walking into a future where... basically, rich people have the option to genetically engineer their offspring to be better than poor people's, thereby entrenching inequality further. Ooh. So it's quite a cheery course.
It is. It's nice. It's quite Black Mirror-esque. Mm. It's eugenics, almost.
It's absolutely eugenics.
Very Arthur C. Clarke.
Yeah. Yuval Noah Harari talks a lot about this in Sapiens.
And Homo Deus.
More in Homo Deus.
I've not read the second one, actually.
Yeah. Well, it's really interesting because, I mean, it's exactly what you're talking about. Mm. I mean, I've got to ask you a question, though. If something was invented, right, because I know you're both sporty guys, that was initially invented for a guy who, say, had broken his leg, compound fracture, never going to be the same again, but it's kind of like a robot sort of clip-on for your leg, and it makes you faster, and then you could get one for Christmas, would you?
I would fucking do it, yeah.
Yeah. Would you
do it? So hang on, is it replacing, because there's an interesting, if you talk to the like hardcore man-machine merging guys,
yes,
transhumanists,
yeah,
there are people who think that there will be a future where actually robot limbs will be better than your actual limbs. Mm-hmm. So you will chop off a limb right. in order to get
on the
a
NHS
new sick limb.
You'll just you could go and pay for it, but if you just chop the limb off,
yeah,
you can go straight to an NHS.
But you'll probably
A&E
get
room
quite. And... it'll be like NHS glasses. It'll be absolutely dog shit. Like it's not going to be a handy one. Yeah. Whereas if you're paying privately,
yeah, you get a nice
sweet
God.
Hand
yeah.
made out of titanium yeah. and everything.
Well, what?
So if it's just clip-on and it's making me go faster, of course. If I'm having to sever a bit of my own body, I think I'm going to pass.
God, that is crazy.
Is yours clip-on or is it sever?
Well, no, this one was clip-on.
And, yeah, I'll take a clip-on. Yeah.
I think the thing is that I'm a big sort of dystopia science fiction fan. So this is kind of an idea that's been going for an awfully long time. Mm-hmm. You know, nanotechnology, it's going to change your internal organs, the capacity of them, the opportunities for, like you've said in some of the stuff we read that you had sent through to us, you know, the idea of being able to eliminate some disease before you're even born is crazy. I mean, can you tell people a bit about that?
Yeah, so the premise really is that you might have a situation, almost certainly will have a situation where you can choose in various ways to eliminate certain genes or even introduce certain genes. Mm. And that feels quite a big thing, but it's going on in terms of sort of selection rather than perfection. Mm. That's what happens at IVF embryo screening. So you have a load of embryos, you do a kind of a genetic scan effectively before you choose which one to implant, and they will give you some statistics about that embryo and that embryo might have a gene that predisposes it towards cystic fibrosis and you would say, well, I probably won't go with that one, and that feels quite it feels quite comfortable. Right. I go, yes, if we're screening for disease,
you're okay with that.
Yeah, and I think most people
but it's
are.
More than just disease, isn't it, because you get hair color and you get
so at the moment it's only disease, and the question really is it's an ethical, moral, and legal question. Currently, you know, you can't even. Well, this is interesting. You would not be allowed to have a gender-specific abortion, so you couldn't. You would not be allowed to find out. And this is probably less relevant somewhere like the UK, but you can see other parts of the world where it's very
India,
relevant.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. India, China, possibly. Yeah. Where you might abort a fetus because of its gender.
Yes.
And that's illegal in most places across the world. But it'd be much harder to legislate for something where you said you can pick an embryo. So you're just selecting. So you're not sort of terminating anything. You're just saying, I'm just going to pick this male
That's what
embryo.
Yeah.
And I'm going to pick
They're
this one
doing that,
as...
aren't they? Aren't people, isn't that already happening?
Yeah, I think possibly in India and... Right. and China, but I don't think it's sort of widely available. But it's I guess my point is that it's a conversation that we absolutely have to be having, because it's going to become more and more relevant and possible. It's the possibility that is terrifying, because 10 years ago all of this chat about genetic engineering and designer babies was sort of pie in the sky. Like we just didn't have the technology to do it. But since the discovery of CRISPR, which is a gene editing technology, and there are new gene editing technologies coming along that are even better than CRISPR, but they are incredibly accurate, and you can pinpoint genes and turn them on or off, take one out, replace it with another, and that opens up a world of possibility.
Do you want to tell people about CRISPR who's maybe never heard of it before?
So CRISPR was discovered, it's slightly contentious actually who discovered it, but Professor Jennifer Doudna is widely credited, and her team, and they were looking at the way that bacteria defend themselves against viruses, and they use quite a clever technique that we've basically borrowed, and it goes in and acts like a little pair of scissors, and so it can just cut your DNA at a certain point, and then so you can take out a specific gene, and then you can implant another gene, or you can go in, and there's various. It's like a little toolkit.
How do they do it with sort? How do they cut the gene?
I think it would be safe to say I can't explain it.
I can. They've got a little teeny pair of scissors.
Oh, that's what
they
thought.
And a little bit of Pritt stick, and they're like, oh, that's how DNA works, mate. Have you seen Jurassic Park, the first one?
Yeah.
You know that weird thing that looks a bit like the paper clip?
Funny I Shrunk the Kids, they just shrink the scientists and they go down.
It's like the paper clip on Microsoft Word, except really, really good.
It looks like you're editing a genome.
Do you need some help with this?
There's a good animation actually that I think I might have retweeted, which kind of shows how it works. But I think the actual details are pretty hard.
It's a bit more complex.
Yeah.
But they're using it already for serious diseases where you can only solve the problem of the disease in the baby if you have three parents, which allows you to snip in some genes from another parent.
Yeah, the three-parent baby thing, it's kind of, it's a slight misnomer, but it's, you take some, if you've got faulty mitochondrial DNA in an egg, you can get some healthy mitochondrial DNA from another and then insert that.
So the kid then has three parents.
A straight swap. So there is genetic material from three people in it. That's not a, that doesn't use CRISPR, actually, I don't think. And it's very, very tightly controlled at the moment. So you're not allowed to do any of this, like CRISPR gene editing in a human embryo. So in 2015, there was a moratorium that the scientific community kind of signed up to where they said, I think we should stop this.
Yeah.
Largely because the Chinese had just done, which they are, I've got to say, they get on with stuff.
Yeah.
They'd done a bit of tinkering with the human embryo.
But this is what
not non-viable embryo, so it's not.
What had they done?
I actually don't know what they were, what they had done, but they'd just done some tinkering.
Yeah.
Within a non-viable embryo, but now even in London, there's a team led by Kathy Nyakam at the Francis Crick Institute, and they've been given a license to do genetic manipulation on very early embryos, and they're looking at kind of developmental problems and they're trying to it's all medicinal stuff.
Yeah. What is aspergic issues or like is
I mean, for example, Asperger's, I don't know off the top of my head if that would be most interesting things are not monogenic. So and there's a real myth, and it's just partly due to bad science communication, bad journalism about the gene for intelligence, the gene for being a slut, the gene for whatever, and it's all bollocks. but there was the stuff that there is a this is probably 10 years ago where people were talking about the slut gene.
I remember.
I mean, I would love to see the app for that. Are you a slut? We can turn it off, you dirty Ross. Yeah. Can I say, there's two, when Rick sent this to us, I thought, it's very Gattaca. Remember Gattaca? Yeah.
Exactly. It's so good. It's so prescient.
I mean, it really
is. Because it was absolutely dismissed by the scientific community at the time, because at the time, the scientific community were mapping the human genome and thought, yes, your fate is in your genes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And Gattaca says, no, it isn't.
Yeah.
And the film is right.
I mean, great for spoiling the ending there.
Yeah.
Okay. If you want to check out the film, it's a very good movie. You should check it out if you haven't seen it. Uma Thurman and
Ethan Hawke,
yeah.
And Jude Law.
Jude Law. Very good, isn't it? Yeah, Jude Law plays the guy whose material he borrows.
Yeah, it's true.
He got it to replenish his. No.
Yeah, so. But the thing is, I have heard one particular story in this area, which is an amazing story, super positive, slightly different because, again, it's about the clip-ons, but something I would really, really love people to know about as well.
Now, can we call them strap-ons or not?
Well, yes, we'll call it strap-ons. You might feel a bit guilty about that. So one of the things that me and Hayden are really into, we've talked about, is the copyleft movement and open source information. And one such company that I saw given the platform at Wired's annual conference last year was Open Bionics. Have you guys heard of Open Bionics?
I have not.
So they're an amazing company. And what they basically have tried to do is they are trying to completely and utterly change the way that prosthetic limbs are seen. So the goal really is to make people, strap-ons, especially children, feel really proud to have their prosthetics. And what they did is quite amazing.
I'm starting to feel a bit worse.
So, I mean, these are like literally 4 or 5 year old children, anyway, whatever. Because the thing is, if you get, you've got a prosthetic forearm that looks like a human being, it looks quite weird.
Yeah.
So what they did, and it is amazing, is they made a deal with Marvel
and
with Disney and with with Lucas Films, and they've actually created like an Iron Man arm, Star Wars arm, a Frozen arm, and these things actually articulate.
Cool. Yeah.
So when the nerve ending actually comes down, you actually see the hand moving. I'm just going to show you guys so you can actually see.
There was a,
look how cool this is. I mean, it is amazing.
There was a viral video of Robert Downey Jr. giving a kid the Iron Man arm a couple of years ago.
Yeah. Amazing.
It's incredible.
And the amazing thing is about Open Bionics is that they are, you know, they're a company that you can find out about, that you can go and volunteer with.
Is it all open source software?
Yeah, they totally. It's open source, so they're trying to share all their information.
That means thousands of hackers and coders around the world can improve the technology of the arm, and then they have to just release the source code of what they've worked on after they've done it.
And I met this amazing young girl called Sydney who had the Iron Man arm. And she was, I think, 7 at the time. And she said to me that she had gone from being bullied in the playground to being the coolest kid.
Yeah, right.
Because suddenly all the kids wanted to have an Iron Man arm, man. Yeah. And in a way, I know that sometimes, you know, particularly when we're talking about automation at the minute and stuff, there's a lot of bad things. But this genuinely is a really feel-good story. And there aren't many of them, you know.
It's cool when kids have it. But then the big problem is, you know, talking about this legislation around this stuff, which in the West is very strict. This is what Naval Yuharari says, is that as soon as the Chinese decide to genuinely do it and put proper Iron Man arms on proper soldiers, everyone's going to do it, because the Americans aren't going to let the Chinese have a bionic army of a billion men with robo arms. They will just never let that happen. So suddenly we're all going to be doing it, and then, you know, Pandora's box is open.
I just don't know about this anymore. I've got to the point now where I just think that, yes, to an extent, you know, this may be the case. I mean, we are still living in an age where Trump has just asked for a military parade. So, I mean, you know, who knows? But I just don't think that's going to happen. I just don't think we're going to be living in... You know, there's a character in the new Deadpool film that's coming out called Cable, who literally is this guy. He literally is the bionic man. Yeah. Are these things just the... I mean, you're the scientist. Do you think this is really going to happen?
No, the military is developing like exoskeleton suits.
Yeah.
Absolutely, and they're really interested in them because they use the tricky thing about exoskeletons, if they're incredibly heavy and hard to move, and so they're using AI within the suit to learn how the soldier moves, so that then it starts to replicate your walking patterns, and suddenly you're able to move around very easily.
So is this like Ripley in Alien, or more like John Boyega in Pacific Rim? Like, what sort of vibe are we talking? Are they giant things?
No. So you'd want it to. These are roughly body size, so it's more like Iron Man, actually.
Okay.
Without the flying.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Sorry.
John Boyega's not in Pacific Rim.
Oh, my God. I think he might be. So not cool.
He's in the new one, isn't he?
Oh, is he?
I think he is.
Well, and also the F-16s, they do this. So the new stealth F-16s, the pilot is plugged into the aeroplane, so he can see 360 degrees around him. He is the weapon. Like, the pilot becomes the weapon. It's insane.
Yeah. I mean,
the line for the new movie, he is the weapon.
And you know, we're choosing at the moment to have a, if you like, human in the loop.
Yeah.
So you have your pilot in
the loop, out the loop, on the loop is a scary thing, isn't it?
A ghost in the machine, if you will.
Well, in the loop, out the loop, and on the loop is about drones, isn't it? Where you have, there are drones now that are armed, where there is no human on the loop whatsoever, and they could just do whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
Which is terrifying.
There's lots of those generally they're defensive. Yeah. So in like the demilitarized zone between North Korea and South Korea.
Yeah.
All out the Iron Dome. Yeah. The Iron Dome is entirely automated. But the sort of offensive weapons that are which don't have a human in the loop.
Or if you piss the defensive ones off enough, they might become a bit offensive.
The amazing ones
are true.
Anyone who hasn't checked
everyone's got limits.
The website of Boston Dynamic, which is a Google-owned robotics company.
They sold it, which is very odd. Don't know why.
It's amazing because me and Hayden have been kind of looking at these, and they're sort of fetishizing them in a way, because they started out looking like quite clumsy, clunky, kind of like Johnny Five,
so fast,
I'm Alive robot.
And now they're...
Also, can I just say about Johnny Five, I'm Alive? Yeah. I listened to this on Adam Buxton's podcast with Ramesh. Do you realise that the scientist in that film
Was white.
Yeah, that was so bad.
I cannot believe you ruined that film for me. Thanks, Ramesh. Thanks, Adam. Can't believe you ruined that film for me. But they started looking like that. Now they look like iPods.
They've just
released one. All these like robot dogs are all like smooth edges, yellow plastic. Yeah, yeah. Like, these things terrify me more than anything. Have you seen one? Like, robot dog?
Yeah, I've also done a similar thing of just gone down a rabbit hole of watching loads of their videos. And they are...
Push him over.
They
he's not going to fall over.
Insane. Well, they're doing like backflips and stuff.
Yeah, totally.
And just like sort of jogging upstairs because I've got such a vivid... Which was the car company? Was it Honda that had the rubbish white robot?
Yes, yes.
And whenever it did anything, it would sort of like stagger down some stairs and you'd feel quite good about it. Yeah, you're
thank God. Yeah. The robot revolution hasn't come yet.
Stupid robot. Yeah.
And now you go, oh... Yeah. That's going up the stairs quicker than me.
That'd be good for old people, though. The knee robot.
Yeah. Yes.
Find stairs very difficult. Well, there you go. That end on a... Maybe by the time our knees are gone, we'll have some extra robo knees. Who would have
Strap on knees.
I'd definitely take the robot arm, I'm telling you.
Who was I talking to? A guy who's a robotics engineer who was talking about just how prevalent robots are in everyday life. And they're just everywhere. And, you know, you think that when the robot revolution comes... The line will be hasta la vista, baby. But actually, it'd be more likely to be there is a bag in your bagging area. please remove bag from your bagging area. And that'll be the final thing you hear before it rips you apart.
But it's it's really... it's a great film, isn't it?
It's not as catchy.
It's because we are surrounded by artificial intelligences. Like robots, depending on how you define robots. But artificial intelligence is all around us. And we're very comfortable with it.
Yeah,
I'm very comfortable with giving our data to it.
Mm.
My favourite...
Talk to some now. Alexa, turn on Maroon 5.
It's that sort of thing, but like, there's an amazing bit
Maroon
with...
5.
Great, I hate Maroon 5. Just attack it.
When you do those capture things online where you have to prove that you're not a robot by identifying which squares have road signs in, which is seems like what you are doing is training the artificial intelligence to become better at that.
Fuck,
that is what
we should
happening.
All stop doing that.
Yeah,
immediately.
Or keep getting
it
wrong.
How many times I get it wrong?
Yeah. Oh, that's
like,
good.
Oh shit,
that's good.
Maybe you are a robot.
I'm like, literally, that would make a lot of sense.
But yeah, robots are just like, oh, interesting. Yeah.
Right, well, we have...
I'm file that away.
That was a majorly meaty main,
good.
And we don't have that long for the dessert.
No.
So let's move on swiftly to our dessert.
Mm, sure.
What have you brought us for our metaphorical sweetener?
This is quite meta. I think there are too many podcasts. Sorry.
Peak podcast.
I find it overwhelming, and I feel guilty when I haven't listened to podcasts that I know I'd like. Can't think of any examples now.
News roast.
Oh, hang on.
Never listen to it.
Yeah. But you know what I mean, though? You just have a backlog of podcasts. Everyone that you know
does
pretty
a fucking
much
podcast.
Has a podcast. Yeah. And I'm sick of it. I'm slightly getting about it with books as well.
Yeah.
Like, I think everyone... it used to be...
I think it's just your mates. Quite... All your friends have published books.
Yeah.
No,
so, Rick, I went to Cambridge. My best friend's Tim Key. Everyone's published a book.
I mean, it's so boring. The new thing is
I'm
not
really down on my luck at the minute, guys. I'm going to Panama for 4 weeks. Yeah.
Genuinely surprised that you guys haven't written a book.
Yeah.
You must have.
I've almost written five.
Ah, good. Yeah. Good.
He's got... That's going to be Hayden's third act. Like, basically, from the age of, I reckon, about 50, he'll churn out so many books that it'll just be like...
I'm getting closer.
Yeah.
But the thing about podcasts, I do agree, it's like it's this sort of like a hyperinflation. It's like the Weimar Republic of podcasts. It's like they're completely worthless. Everyone has got a fucking podcast.
Yeah.
They mean nothing.
I don't think we're anywhere near reaching peak podcast. I don't think you realise how many people have not even downloaded one podcast ever in this
there
country.
Are so many podcasts that some scientists believe we might actually all be living in a podcast right now.
Yeah, I believe that.
The world is a podcast.
Very elaborate.
The thing that's amazing, I'll tell you some facts I didn't know. Do you know which country has the most expensive podcast advertising space?
Oh, I don't know. It's a good question.
America.
Good America.
Question.
You're going with America?
Obviously America.
I'll go Sweden.
Sweden is the correct answer.
Why?
Sweden is the country.
I'm delighted.
Sweden is the country that was basically the place where podcasts first took off.
Yeah.
And in Sweden, advertising space around podcasts is incredibly expensive.
Mm.
Which country has the longest podcasts?
The longest podcast? Sweden?
No.
Oh.
UK?
No.
Ooh.
America. Oh. Where people like Joe Rogan.
Yeah, Joe Rogan. Yeah.
Fucking Joe
That's
Rogan.
Too much.
What do podcast experts put that down to?
Joe Rogan.
No.
What?
Time of a commute.
Yeah, so that makes sense.
Because
it's American. It's like, I'm doing my 3-hour commute. I'll listen to Joe Rogan.
But I mean,
might get through half an episode.
But it kind of makes sense because it's
it
kind of like, you know, a lot of people.
They're all just sitting in LA traffic or they're like, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
why do Americans commute longer?
When I lived in Long Island, literally, they were just like, hey, it's
no
problem. It's just 2 hours into the city.
Yeah.
Like, The Northern Lights are taking more than
need
like.
To get some trains, those fuckers, don't they?
It's apparently sense of distance.
They think the trains are too European.
Yeah.
There's amazingly.
Commie trains. Yeah. It's a socialist train.
The podcast model is quite strange as well, because like usually the value of a podcast is determined by how many listeners it has. And obviously when you have an America, like Pod Save America, for instance, just came into the market and it exploded.
Yeah.
So really it's the same as any other form of media, isn't it? If you make it in America, then suddenly it's...
You get more money.
You get your money because you're suddenly, you know, more valuable. But it's a...
So, but I just understand why the advertising space is more in Sweden.
Because it has become one of the forms of communication. Like, it's like, it's they're just incredibly popular. Yeah. And they have been for quite a while.
Yeah.
It's not like a new thing. It's also the home of Spotify, bizarrely. Yeah. Oh, yeah, so it's kind of like, there's a lot more... And I don't know if this is true. I'd quite be interested if any listeners could tell me. Apparently, they have the best broadband in Europe. I don't know if this is true or not.
Good on
Sweden. But that would make sense.
Would
make
it feels right. Yeah.
They do.
Also, I guess that now iTunes have released all of these analytics that seem to show people listen to podcasts for quite a long time, aren't bothered by the adverts or like reads and stuff. Like, you just kind of accept them. That will make podcasts, because people were worried when that came out, oh, this might be the death of podcasts, but actually it feels like
when the analytics came out,
because they thought that it might show that people just switch off as soon as there's an ad or whatever, but it shows the opposite.
Right.
So advertisers will probably be more interested, and therefore the problem of too many podcasts will get worse.
Yeah. Are you getting loads and loads of views, listens on your podcast?
I think it does okay, but and I guess actually it becomes harder to expand in a crowded market, although actually what's good for us is there aren't that many decent science podcasts.
Yeah, it's true.
Which is helpful.
It's really lucky that not many people talk about politics and comedy, isn't it?
Lucky. You have found a niche, guys.
But the thing is, you know, I genuinely think that, isn't it good actually that podcasts have become much more like, there's so many more of them, because I mean radio, it was like you get 2 minutes to say, there's no depth anymore, really. Like,
and now
I like listening to Ramesh.
It's like
for
the new long read. It's like the new novel, because people don't read novels.
And you
and
can
people
talk
are getting
about
back into
things.
Long reads now. And
exactly. I think that's exactly the same
thing.
I guess as well, it's easy to be quite cynical about this, but what people I think like about podcasts is them being easy to listen to, and when you get to the end of a podcast, you feel like you've learnt something. And you feel like, so it's a kind of commodification of knowledge, which is no bad thing. However, I think there's a sort of, there's a counter to that, which is, and I'm definitely guilty of this, do you know Jamie Bartlett? Who's an
absolute
dog.
Darknet.
Amazing
great, book, great if book. You haven't checked it out.
Radicals is also excellent. He came up with the notion of Ted-splaining. And I was like, God, that's me.
Yeah.
That's everyone.
What is it?
And so Ted-splaining is when you watch a TED talk, so 15 minutes, and then you sort of lecture people about the subject.
like you are
a leading expert in the field. I think pod-splaining is probably a thing as well, where you listen to one thing and you're like, I'll have that.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna and it's
out of interest.
That's my angle.
Let's be honest here, no lying, like genuine talk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What have you Ted-splained the most about people? I can tell you absolutely definitely the two things.
What
I
have you Ted-splained?
So when I Ted-splain people, and it's usually part of my like chat, like date chat.
Do you do it on date?
No,
the worst. I'm being honest about it.
I'm 24.
I'm 24. That's what's on my Tinder profile. Anyway, I go for the two TED Talks that have been banned.
Oh, okay. Cool. Yeah.
So War on Consciousness by the great Graham Hancock and The Science Delusion by Rupert Sheldrake. And
both banned because they were
both banned because
really quite bad science.
Well, you can say they were. They're not empiricist science.
Oh, right.
They're normative by their nature.
Is Rupert Sheldrake the morphic resonance guy?
Yes.
That's right.
Guy who's like, if one rat learns to do something, every other rat in the world also learns it.
Listen, man, you're both
sounds
such
good.
Empiricists.
Why is it that when people are looking at you behind you, you know they're looking at you? It's because of morphic resonance.
If you can't believe the fact that there is so much going on in science that we... The fact that... So, I, this is what
no,
I find
no, let's just establish this. On your dates, you quote the two... This. The two not all talks. Dates.
I do it also at dinner parties. No, oh, but my no. point
on
is,
a date, if you're staring into a girl's eyes,
I want to know what yours are. What are the ones the TED
Mine's
talks?
A good
you
one.
TED
yeah, same. Always on Morphic Resonance.
Mine's a good one because the TED talk that I always quote isn't actually a TED talk. It is my friend Nimrod Kamer, who we're all aware of, who printed
yes,
up.
Aware of
he printed up some foam TED letters and he put them on a stage and he got up. He talks like that and he did an entire speech. Pretending it was a TED talk, and then he cut in shots of audience members from actual TED talks.
That's really, I mean,
and he put it online, and then he God. Says to people at dinner parties, "I have a TED talk," and then he can like reference it online if he.
He's a. I don't just, know what to make of that.
Oh
man.
God!
At all, at all. I find him.
That means Nimrod has now been mentioned in this series
difficult.
Almost three times.
Yeah, of okay. course, though.
Right. What are your? What's your best TED splaining? Do you do?
I think I do a bit. This is very mainstream TED splaining. A bit from that Ken Robinson education.
Oh, that's one of the best
yeah.
ones ever.
Yeah, but Ken also Robinson's because my cheap. Best friend is a headmaster, and so we talk about education quite a lot. But I still lean on the Ken Robinson stuff to ease myself into it. But
I was going to say you can't quote TEDx's though, can you?
Can't oh, say, I don't know no, what you're talking
you
about.
You can't say this TEDx that I saw.
What it, I would of, just use the word TED.
One of yeah. the biggest pars anyone's ever given to me was when I said, oh, I did a TED talk, oh, and they just went, TEDx? And I went, yeah.
Have you heard yeah. of yeah, yeah.
It's still very impressive to have done a TEDx. I haven't, you know, or Johnny
Have you heard that. Of the 10 TED Commandments?
No.
And did you know that, so basically, I can't remember
it's a bit
exactly
of a cult,
it is.
Isn't it?
It's, oh my God, it's the biggest modern cult yeah. there is. It's the biggest intellectual snobbery cult.
Yeah.
And they also, if they think they're like, that movie, The Circle, yeah. they invite you apparently yeah. to the campus.
They send
quote,
you a tablet.
Unquote. They send you a stone tablet
yeah.
with the 10 TED Commandments.
Like the Edstone.
Yes.
Oh, I missed the Edstone. Where is the Edstone?
Oh, mate.
It's great to think that the Edstone is somewhere.
Somewhere in someone's, one of some advisors' rooms.
Millerbean's actually so. Now got his own politics podcast as well. Which
yeah,
apparently yeah. where he just explains
reasons
politics.
To be cheerful.
Yeah,
yeah reasons politics. To be cheerful. Yeah.
I think he's probably quite good in it. I like him.
I like his vibe
I wonder
now.
If he's using it as a tabletop. He's got a couple of trestle yeah. legs and he's just using yeah. the Edstone as
what,
a breakfast
what his,
table.
What his mistake was just not to be more the like actually how he is now.
Yeah.
When he was actually in power.
Bit
I think it's
chill.
Just the anti politics.
Yeah. Am I tough enough? Hell yes, I'm tough enough. tough enough.
That is, I'm not accepting that. It's not okay. That is not okay. Tuss enough.
Poor
who
Ed.
Would make jokes about Millerbad's voice?
You stuck a post-it note on his back saying, kick me.
Kick me.
So I don't think you
back.
Can.
Harsh.
Yes, I don't think you've got the moral high ground there.
No. Well.
So
at
hang
least.
On, what's on the? What are these TED Commandments?
I don't know what they are. I'm not going to lie, I don't know what they
oh,
are.
No,
but
it's all sorts of stuff about, you know, like Chatham House type rules and stuff like that, and like being respectful. But they're also
it's
like
fuck a pig head or anything like that.
That's the last one. Ah. But it's like, but it's like $5,000 a ticket to like a proper.
Shut is it?
Yeah,
is it?
They're like insanely expensive.
Fuck, we better get comp somehow. Do you know yeah. what I mean? But no, it is. I mean, look, TED
or
talks are a great
go.
Thing. They're one of the great things about the internet. Yes, yeah. I love them. That Ken Robinson one you're talking about changing educational paradigms, one of the best things I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
Really genuinely is. And there are people that I would never have known
Still
about.
Still not as good as the new Nike ad, though.
It's oh,
very good.
Yeah. My goodness.
Great.
That advert
yeah, yeah,
is
yeah.
incredible.
Yeah. Brilliant. Dicked all over Ken Robinson.
It's kind of a good Remainer video. It's like London,
yeah,
like everything
it
that,
is.
You know, like it's. I think we should, you can like fuck
it's
you.
Or I mean, it's slightly. Yeah. Also, it could be seen as sort of quite isolationist.
Yeah.
Can I tell you what's good about this country?
Yeah.
London.
London.
I'll tell you what isn't the fucking rest.
I'll have a vote for London to. What was our sketch again? Scotland. Scotland
yeah.
and London.
Yeah, we just become part of Scotland
because they were both the remaining centres.
Scotland.
Well, listen, Rick. What have you got coming? But before, if anyone, which I'm sure you all already. Follow Rick on Twitter, but what is your Twitter handle?
@ Rick Edwards one.
And
don't know who got @ Rick Edwards.
Yeah. Tell me about the what's the title of the book, the latest book?
Science-ish. So it's based on the podcast, and we explore the sort of fringes of science through films. One of them we talk about is Gattaca.
Nice.
Planet of the Apes, talk about evolution, whether we'll ever get displaced by another species.
Mm-hmm.
The Matrix, are we living in a podcast?
Mm.
The Matrix, some
one.
Others.
I mean, genuinely.
So every chapter is
a new film.
And you,
yeah, yeah. And then cool. we talk three yeah, big science
great.
Questions.
It's great.
And it is available now. I think it's very cheap on Kindle at the moment.
Mm.
So cheap that it feels like a failing model. Like, I don't know how it can. Kindles. I think it's £1.89 for a book that I slaved over.
Yeah.
You're going to go, that.
What
I feel
about
like
Michael Wolff? So Michael Wolff as well. Like, loads of people, like, as soon as Fire and Fury was visited, like, don't worry, there's a PDF.
Yeah.
I got to send the PDF. Yeah.
But listen,
shit, not, he probably
make
did
sure
okay
that doesn't happen to
Rick Edwards, thank you so, so much for coming on our podcast.
Are you full after your courses?
I am, yeah.
Absolutely. Intellectually repeat stuffed. I'll go and just TED talk someone. What was it?
Ted's Plane. Pod's Plane.
Yeah. Oh, Pod's goodness Plane. Me. Well, listen.
Thanks, Rick.
And guys, please do us a favour.
Please review
and
it.
Please rate and review the podcast on iTunes.
Rating.
See you soon.
Rating you want. Yeah. Review, you know, fine. Take it or leave it. But ratings,
does,
that's
does
what
the
you
reviews
want
not really matter?
I think once you get a certain number of reviews, you're all right. But you just want shitloads of ratings.
Okay, so yeah, rate us.
Even if they're low.
Right. No!
Just rate us.
Good ratings.
Just troll one or two stars
is
fine.
We need to beat the algorithm. Please rate us. See.
Welcome to Beat the Algorithm. Thank you very much, guys. We will see you next week.
Okay, bye.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.